People don't know how to think. I mean, people don't know how to think. They don't know how to think for themselves. Any kind of math course, what you're trying to do is teach the students to think for themselves.
Step right up. Place your bet. And here we go. We have another winner. Five. All right, so you understand they're all the same value. Yeah, they're all the same.
Okay, the basic idea was just to study the theory of the hot hand in sports.
We wanted to find out what the dating patterns of males are on campus.
We just did a test on college GPA, what affects college GPA.
The M&M company says they put certain percentage of different colors in each package, but and I wanted to see if that was true.
I used Datadesk, and then I also used another program called DeltaGraph. I pretty much ran the gamut in terms of the programs that I used.
I had created a bunch of hypotheses of things that I thought were accurate, and actually a lot of them were proven wrong.
This is our hot hand simulation. There's a project overview, which basically just discusses what Sam was talking about in some finer detail.
One of the nice things about the chance course is it has a chance to be pretty relevant if it can be done right.
The purpose of chance is to try to get you more used to reading articles in the newspaper that depends one way or the other on probably your statistics. Reporters have to be able to digest very quickly information that they learn about, say, a week or so after, a few days after it's announced publicly. So it's always interesting to know how they do it.
I thought we'd just deputize you for the next hour or so and give you a taste of what this feels like and what we are up against in writing the kinds of articles you'll be looking at this semester. So what are the strengths and weaknesses of the way this study was done? Methodologically, is it good? Yes.
Well, it was only done in rural Nicaragua, and I don't know how translatable that is to New York City or even to rural America.
I have a question on supplemental vitamin index, dietary cholesterol, all those things. How do they adjust that? Is there a number they plug in?
Roughly, they try to look at groups that are similar.
People really do make choices and decisions based upon what they read in the newspaper.
If the weather person predicts a 30% chance of rain, and it rains, is the weather person correct or not? So they said a 30% chance of rain in Hanover today, it rained.
I'm going to talk a little bit about the reality of weather forecasting and the reality of how weather forecast gets to the public.
It's a pretty straightforward picture today, and especially right now. Rain, rain, and more rain as the whole system moves up and away. There's some patchy fog in here as well.
We know in some sense that there are physical principles that underlie precipitation. It turns out that actually what we use to forecast precipitation is primarily a lot of probability and statistics.
When I was just about the same age as you, I was 19, and I was employed as a statistician by the Royal Air Force to analyze bomber operations in World War II. Well, the problem which I was interested in was the effect of experience on bomber losses. That is, was it true, as the official mythology proclaimed, that as you got more experience, you were less likely to get shot down? the air crew had to fly 30 operations, a tour of operations was 30. And so the actual chance of their surviving was very small, but this, of course, the whole point was they weren't encouraged to figure the odds. So I decided the thing to do, which is really very, very obvious, is to separate the data into very small homogeneous categories, take a particular operation and a particular bomber group and a particular flying route, and consider the statistics independently for every one. So I did this. I collected all the operations for about a year. I was doing this in the summer of 1944, when the war was still going strong, and the answer was zero. I mean, that came as a shock. It was experience was not helping at all, with very high statistical significance.
So what happened? Did you tell the people this?
Yes. So because I was 19, and the commander in chief of Bomber Command was supposed to listen to what I said. I mean, what a hope! And he was, of course, firmly convinced of the official mythology. He didn't want to hear this. And so nobody actually paid much attention to it. It could have saved a huge number of lives if it had been taken seriously.
Well, I'm an epidemiologist, and epidemiologists study medical events. And the mathematics of epidemiology then involves counting individuals who get different diseases or who don't. And examining their characteristics.
I want to know how much other factors play in that statistic, because...
Which statistic?
The one that we were just debating on, endometrial cancer,
okay.
I believe it is.
Yeah.
All right, you answered the question already. You said that it does protect, but I want to know if that was really true. Like, if maybe we weren't taking into consideration the other factors that a non-smoker would, you know, come into play.
Okay, you mean smokers and non-smokers are different. Well, why don't we get back to that later today? That's a topic I want to get back to, but in fact, smoking does look like it's protective, even when you deal with all this. It's the only cancer that smoking protects against.
Welcome to The Price is Right. Thank you.
How many of you have seen Price is Right's game show at some point? You can admit it, I'm not going to worry about what else you should be doing at 10 o'clock.
The one of you three who is nearest to $1 on the big wheel without going over will be in the showcase at the end of the show today. If you get $1 in one spin or a combination of two spins, we will give you $1,000 and a bonus spin.
This is an almost strictly strategy game, and I think I'll let Bill set up the strategy a little bit.
If you're the first contestant, what happens? Let's say you spin a nickel. Well, obviously, you're not going to win with a nickel, so you spin again. Well, if you spun the first time a dollar, you're going to say you're crazy to spin again. So somewhere in between, you're going to have some decisions to make.
The easiest way to present this, I think, is with a table. After working out these formulas, I stuck it into a simple computer program to actually make the calculation. And this is the result of program to calculate the probabilities of winning the first player in a two-player game.
Johnny got it. $1, and you get your bonus spin in just a moment. Come right over here.
How many times should you shuffle a deck of cards?
Three.
Now, whoever said 20, who was that?
I shuffle about 5 or 6.
I see. 5 or 6, you think that's enough? We're going to demonstrate today, I hope, among other things, that 7 times is not enough. So, why don't we do it?
Let's go.
All right, ready?
Shuffle 7 times
and cut. I warn you, it's harder to keep track of the number of times you shuffle than you might think. We're going to play a game called New Age Solitaire. Let me show you how this goes. You start going through the deck, and whenever I come to an ace, I can put it up like in
two things are important. First of all, the cards have to come in this peculiar order. And second of all,
You have to play a very specific game designed to take advantage of this peculiar order they're in. Under those circumstances, you have the possibility of observing that seven shuffles are not enough.
And when you're done, come and make a mark under... come and do it here. How can we make a mathematical model of what's going on here? We have to have some way of thinking about the shuffle mathematically. If you look at shuffling backwards, what's the opposite of shuffling? Sorting. This is the whole key to the analysis, you see?
Now, once you realize that there's this connection between sorting and shuffling, then that gives you the tools to understand how many times you must shuffle the cards in order to get them into a random order.
Okay, well, that's all we have time for.
It's not so much a question of quiz shows. It's not so much a question of cancer studies, but it has to do with everyday life.
It's rather unique in the sense that it's something you can talk about that people pretty much have to care about.
Rather than, well, you know, the experts say. We want to give them an idea of what those experts are doing and how they might have screwed up.